Hello, Internet. Welcome to episode 131 of the Assorted Calibers podcast, the second amendment podcast. There's a little bit for everyone. I'm Weirdbeard, and with me, as always, is the greatest hostess a podcast could have, Aaron Paulette. How you doing, Aaron?
You're only saying that because I didn't interrupt you this time.
I mean, for those who listen to the blooper reel, the show starts with a screwed up intro. Sometimes it's my fault. Oftentimes it's other people's fault. I'm mostly talking about Xander.
The first time was an accident. The second time I did it because I thought it was funny. I have to admit, I really was tempted to interrupt you a third time just because I thought it was funny.
But I would have just kept talking over you and deleted it in post. But needless to say, these are all reasons why you are the bestest hostess, Eric.
Oh, thank you.
So how are you doing?
I am doing strangely well considering my family situation, which I'm not going to get into. It's just drama. And the fact that this time of year is usually pretty rough for me. And it's not. And I'm not really sure why, although I am so not complaining. But there hasn't been the usual Christmas stress and Christmas craziness. And so the exterior is decorated. The interior is getting decorated. Mom's doing her cooking. And, you know, I'm not gaining weight. I gained weight at Thanksgiving. And, you know, with all the treats and fudge and divinity and wreaths and other things, it's like I'm a pig. I'm going to be a pig until January. I got a new computer this weekend. It is basically my big Christmas present. And the old computer, which was made for me by a friend of the show, Awelawant, several years ago, and I don't know how old the parts were, It was starting to, well, when I say it was starting to get old, it was, you know, this program didn't take as much time to load, and it's taking longer now. And it was just making noises, and I got the feeling that it was going to fail sooner rather than later, and I didn't think it could last the year, and it might not even make it until my birthday. And so I found a really awesome Black Friday deal, and it's like, I think I can make this work, because, you know, I've got money, and there's Christmas money that's going to be coming in, and if I'm really careful, I can make it happen. And so I got this really nice refurbished computer, because I still can't afford new. But let me see. It's an i7 processor, and I don't remember the gigahertz-y speed of the processor, but I liked it. 16 gigs of RAM and a 1 terabyte solid-state drive. So, hey, that's everything I need it for, because it's not like I'm into, you know, hardcore gaming or computer rendering or anything else like that, and this ought to last me a good long while, and, you know, it's nice and fast, and oh my god, it's so quiet. That's really neat. And so over the weekend, I was installing programs again, because that's what you do. But hopefully we aren't going to have any problems with audio. Everything should work. I expect everything to work. And, you know, I look forward to getting lots of use out of this very nice computer. So how are you doing, Weird?
I'm doing all right. I mean, I won't get into it, but some of the family drama found us. you didn't find it, and it found us. The humorous story version of it was, we decided that it was time that my daughter got to see Princess Bride. On Friday night, we finished up dinner. She got into her PJs and got ready for bed and climbed into bed with us, and we put on Princess Bride. And I am happy to inform everyone that she loved it. The issue comes is that we stayed up a little bit late. And for those that don't have children, or those who do have children, know that there's a window of when they get tired. They get tired, and then they get overtired. And when they get overtired, suddenly they have a new burst of energy. And so it took a while for her to get down to bed. So she ended up going to bed really late, and then woke up earlier than normal. And that was not a good start to that day. And the added effect was we were having what they call in New England a wintry mix, which sounds just lovely. That sounds pleasant. It sounds like one of those like bagged salads that you can get at the deli counter of the.
I was actually thinking it was more like the snow version of potpourri.
Yes. Yes, but instead it is just everything you hate about winter all at once. It might be hail, it might be sleet, it might be rain, it might be snow, and it's just a mess. And so
what the hell, we'll throw in some fog, why not?
Yep, and there's just high winds and just it was insanely gross, and so I couldn't take her outside and get her to run around and get some of that aggression out, and so it was just a miserable day. And then we had planned on getting down the Christmas tree and getting all the decorations out, but we just said, you know what, let's save it until the next day. And then just we were all just tired and grumpy come the next morning. And we got all the stuff decorated and it went through. It was a little bit ruckus. Well, one of the things is we stored the Christmas stuff up under the eaves in the attic, and we had our roof replaced in the spring, in the before times, as I like to say, in the times when people were outside and had faces. But I had essentially, when they replaced the roof, the uninsulated attic portions, just all sorts of stuff falls in through between the roof boards. And so there was all sorts of, you know, chunks of wood and that black rough material that's on the shingles and all that stuff was all in.
Oh, the tar paper.
Yeah, exactly. And I cleaned up as much of it as I could, but it was mostly full and it didn't feel like unpacking all the Christmas stuff that day. And so I when we opened it up, I suddenly realized, oh yeah, everything is covered with crap. So let's get the vacuum out. We got one vacuum out and it was broken. And so I got to throw that off the third floor balcony. That was fun. It's easier than taking it down the stairs.
You threw the bag? You threw the vacuum?
I threw the vacuum. It was awesome.
See, that's what I thought.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Well, that's one of my fun games of I'm a grown up. I can misbehave and no one will yell at me I justify to myself that when I'm emptying all the, when the kitchen bag gets full, there's usually enough head space in it that I can squish this stuff down and then just start going around to the different trash cans around and filling it up. And eventually I will end up on the third floor and I'll empty the trash can that's up there. And then, well, I'm not going to bring this down. It might catch a corner and then it might leak garbage stuff all over the floor. So it is much easier to throw it off the balcony into the backyard, and therefore it'll land right by the trash bags. And then I'll just walk downstairs. But really, I do it because it's awesome.
So your vacuum cleaner just broke and you tossed it out?
I threw it out. Yeah, I threw it out the window and then I got the good vacuum. This was the just crappy, you know, the small job vacuum cleaner. I got out the big old Dyson and that thing ate everything.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So yeah, so that was that day. But we got everything decorated. Everyone was happy. My wife played Christmas music. Ugh. And so that was that. And now we're back to things. It was a bit of a busy day today, but you know what? I'm recording a podcast now and I'm having fun.
Well, you are the podcast bicycle.
I am.
Or at least you were.
I haven't done as many guest appearances as I used to. I don't know. I'm super busy with this, so I'm not. It's not like I'm just craving to get on more pod. Look, I'm on three podcasts of my own now. Like we're always doing like film tracks and blooper reels and the mag dump and all. There's always something else going on. So I've kind of made my own empire.
Plus Handgun Radio.
Yes, plus Handgun Radio. I forgot about Handgun Radio.
Oh, Ryan's gonna be pissed when he hears that.
Well, we don't like him.
Wow. That's okay, Ryan. I still like you.
So, Aaron.
Yes.
Speaking of crap.
Oh, smooth move, X-Lax.
I was on the Blue Collar Prepping website and I saw something that was interesting to me. And let's be honest. I think this should be an interest to everyone, especially since the grocery store has, I was just at the store today, the grocery store has started putting up the signs that is rationing the supply of paper products. And mm-hmm. so there may be, there may not be, I'm not sure, another toilet paper shortage. I don't think there will be, because I don't think we'll be doing the full-scale lockdown that we did in the spring. There are lots of people going back to businesses, so the industrial toilet paper is being used. But you bought a bidet.
I did. And in fact, I bought it for that reason. I heard that, I heard that in preparation for the expected surge of COVID cases, what with the winter months and flu and cold season, that there was already a run on toilet paper products. And I just decided, you know, I had wanted one before and I couldn't get it during the COVID crisis because they'd all been bought out. And I just figured, you know what? I've got a $30 gift card from Amazon. I'm just going to get one and try to get ahead of the curve. And that'll make our toilet paper supplies last that much longer.
And so I had to bring it in. We'll try not to be too gross. And we don't need to get into too much of the gory details, because your review is very extensive and very good on Blue Collar Prepping. It's in the show notes if you're not already a follower of Blue Collar Prepping. I'd gotten curious about it, and there's been something that I've always been fascinated of. As soon as I saw Crocodile Dundee, that was when I first learned about bidets, and
it's for your backside,
exactly. And I just thought, oh man, like yeah. And I was just like, was telling people like, this seems like a good idea. And as a friend of mine said, well yeah, think about it. What do you do after you shampoo your hair? Do you rinse off or do you towel dry? Like yeah. That's pretty much a great analogy of bidets. And so ever since then, I've been interested in them, but I mean, I've never had a bathroom that was set up for it. Never stayed in a swanky hotel that had one either, but now they've got all these attachments. And then I recently heard in another podcast, someone who had gotten a bidet, and they said, oh yeah, no, the bidet attachments, I'm not so sure about them because it's cold water. And so I wanted to know what has been your experience with this?
Well, I have to tell you that I had similar concerns, and I queried the people who I knew had bidets. And apparently there is a very quiet but very enthusiastic bidet cult in America. You know, they don't go around advertising it, but if you talk about it, oh my God, they will be happy to talk your ear off. So regarding the cold water, it isn't that big of a deal. At least it's not to me. I can feel that it is. Well, actually, it's more like I can feel that it isn't warm water, but it's not the, oh my God, shock to the system that I thought it was going to be. Maybe because it's cold and concentrated, it kind of numbs everything instantly. I don't know. My rear end feels a little bit cold, but it's not painful. It's not jarring to me. I don't know if I would really call it refreshing, but if you're tired, it'll help get you a little bit more awake, but it's not painful. It's not uncomfortable. I will also say that if you have anal irritation from hemorrhoids, or, you know, if you've just had that night of diarrhea, you know, you ate Indian food and everything burns as it comes out, you know what? Cold water can feel really, really good. So it could be a bonus at times. And finally, if it is super important to you to have warm water, they make warm water bidets. It is possible. You will pay more for it. I paid about $30 for mine, and the warm water one I think cost about $45 to $50. The problem with that is that regular bidets, you can just tap into the regular cold water line that is literally on the wall next to your toilet. There's no problem. You need a bit of hose that's like a foot at most. If you want the hot water, you have to actually snake a hose line over to where your sink is and tap into the hot water line there. Now, bathrooms are different. Some bathrooms have the toilet like literally right next to the sink, in which case, that's not a problem. In my case, the sink is on one of the long walls, and then the toilet is on one of the short walls next to the tub. You know, we were talking like 6 feet away, and it's behind cabinets, and just that's not going to happen. So that's why I didn't get one. It's not that big of a deal to me, but if it is for some people, you know what? You can fix that.
Ooh, and also I just realized too, unless you have a circulator pump on it, which some people do, especially the people that use a tankless system, if you don't have a circulator pump, on your hot water line, it's still going to be cold when it first comes out.
That's right. Oh, I'd forgotten about that. Yeah, you might have to let it run, in which case, there's not really a delicate way to do that. You basically have to put down the lid and turn it on, mm-hmm. and then it sprays over the back of the lid. Well, I mean, it's a good way to test that it's working, mm-hmm. but yeah, it's one of those, let's just say that the water gets some pretty good hang time. Fair enough. You turn it on when the lid is up, you can catch it in the face. It has a good volume.
Yeah, well, and you need to have a little, you're having enough pressure that it will get you clean.
Mm-hmm. And the one I have, I think all of them actually come with a pressure dial, and so it starts off gentle, and then you can dial it up to. I don't have a very good analogy.
More daddy.
So let me just skip ahead to something, and I'm going to apologize for any particular indelicacy. Look, everyone poops. We all have to do it, but I'm also a big fan of the Squatty Potty, which is something you can get on Amazon for like $25. And what that does is that raises your knees above your hips so that you adopt a more natural squatting position, and that relaxes the anal sphincter. And it really does make it easier to poop. It's, I don't have to force. Also, if you like reading on the toilet, that helps. It doesn't completely stop your legs from going numb, but it gives you longer endurance until it happens. And so that's neat. But I'm just going to tell you that with the bidet on high and using the Squatty Potty, if you angle yourself just right, you can give yourself a mini enema. I mean, it's not going to go very deep, but it'll clean out. I don't know. It feels like a couple of inches. I have no depth gauge. I don't have any way of knowing. But that is a good way to further clean yourself out. And, you know, if you're having constipation, well, gee, that water can help chip away at it. It can help moisturize it, generally make things better. Look, I bought this thing about 2 weeks ago. And last week, I was having a really, really bad issue. And it felt like nothing was moving, and it was really painful. For a moment, I actually thought I was having another kidney stone. And just the relief granted to me by the bidet really made it worth it. I mean, I would have paid $30 just for that day. And it helped relieve the pain and helped everything pass more quickly. Then there's the fact that it saves on toilet paper usage. Now, you're never going to be completely free because you do need to dry yourself. And, okay, I suppose if you wanted to, you could dry yourself off with a towel. But there's always going to be that one time when you didn't quite get everything off, and so there's some fecal matter there. But I have gone from, okay, I've got to grab a handful, and I've got to, you know, wipe vigorously, to just, you know what, I pat myself dry. I can literally get by with a square. And so that has extended the duration of our toilet paper stocks dramatically.
Actually, I would say, interestingly enough, in one of the bathrooms, which might be the one that I would install this in, we happen to have it's just a bucket, but it is the hamper that we use for when this all started. My wife bought a big old sack of essentially kitchen towels, just inexpensive terry cloth towels. And we have been using those in lieu of paper towels for most things. We'll use to clean up spills and little things and all of that. And then when it gets dirty, we throw it in the bin, and there's a whole bunch of them. And then a couple of times a week, I'll do a load of laundry, and that will be the gets washed on hot, along with all of our masks and stuff like that. And honestly speaking, you could, if you wanted to get rid of all the toilet paper whatsoever, or you were in such a shortage that you ran out, that would be an instance where it would really take good advantage, because you could use, you know, just little, you know, little small towels, little hand towels, if you will, to clean yourself off, and just, you know, throw those in to the laundry, and you're not dealing with disgustingly soiled. I talked about at the beginning of this was I had a plan for there'd be a trash can in the bathroom. There would be a stack of rags. You would then use the rags to clean yourself and then throw them away. And then, and then that would be that, and it would be sealed up and we'd be taking care of it. But you'd be dealing with dirty, disgusting rags that needed to be disposed of and needed to be stored in such a way that it wouldn't stink up the entire bathroom. This, I don't think, would be that issue.
I think you've got a great solution there. If you're willing to go that extra step of doing the laundry, yeah, you can just eliminate toilet paper altogether.
That's crazy. Well, you know what? You've gotten me thinking long and hard about this. I think these may appear. One last question I got for you is the installation. How involved is it?
Ooh, I'm not really sure how to explain in terms of involvement. I mean, I didn't find it difficult. It took me a bit longer because while I am, proficient with tools, I wouldn't consider myself an expert. Plus, we had a little bit of a non-standard toilet seat that gave me some problems. But, okay, so here's what you do. First of all, you unscrew the lid and you take the entire seat off. Then you're going to put the bidet on, and then you put the seat back on, and you trap the bidet between the toilet seat and the commode. Then, well, by this time, you should have already turned off the tap and flushed the toilet so that there's nothing in there. You remove the hose to the tank, and then you put on another hose that splits off, so part of it goes to the tank and part of it goes to the bidet attachment, and then you snake that over and you attach it to the bidet itself. It took me about an hour to do everything, but that's because I had a bit of a problem with, this toilet seat isn't going to work, let's go and get the other one from the spare bathroom, and that worked fine. It's not difficult. I just found it time consuming. If you are handy with tools, you can probably get it done in 30 minutes. I mean, you don't have to be a plumber. Pretty much anyone can do it. The only tools that you need are whatever is necessary to remove your own toilet seat. In my case, it was a socket wrench. Everything else comes with the bidet itself.
So essentially, it's no more involved than, it's probably less involved than rebuilding a toilet, which I've had to do, where you take all the guts out of the tank and replace it with new stuff because that stuff rusts out and gets cruddy.
Oh, yeah. That's way more involved. That's way more involved. About the only other thing I would add is you might consider this, an upsell, an add-on. I think it's necessary. You will want to have bumpers for your toilet seat. And what I mean by that is, because the bidet itself is an extra, I want to say like a quarter of an inch, the toilet seat is no longer going to be flush with the commode itself, and there'll be some flex. And depending on the material, if it flexes too much, it might break, it might crack, and you don't want that. And so you can get $10, and so you can buy these bumpers for $10, and they're made by the same company, so you know it'll work. And they raise your toilet seat a uniform amount, and you are guaranteed not to damage anything. I think they're worth it. I'm very happy to have gotten it because before I installed it, I could go, yeah, I can see that flex. Mm-hmm. That's not going to be good when, 150 or more pounds of weight are put on it. So I would consider that essential. If you don't, let me know how it works. I'm genuinely interested. It's not a ha-ha, let me know how it works. It's a, I might be wrong. I don't know. But I'm glad I got them.
Yep.
So weird. Have I sold you on the idea? Are you gonna get one for your family?
I think I have. I may have to show this article to my wife just to see if I can get her blessing for it as well. But I think this might end up underneath the Christmas tree.
Well, all right then.
So shifting gears away from the commode, I wanted to just briefly touch on this only because you talked about me not blogging as much, and now all of a sudden I've got another post up.
Well, good.
And this one is tangentially related to what we did for our Halloween episode. You had me, Manuel Oliver, doing his like undead son raising revenant nonsense and all that. Well, he's started up something new. Actually, didn't check. I just checked the comments and views just to see how it was going on, but I didn't look to see if he's uploaded any more of these videos. But he's got two of them up, at least on my blog, at least as far as I did that. I don't know if he's doing more, which he calls Absurd Reality, and Absurd Reality 1 and Absurd Reality 2. They are still images of essentially rural convenience stores. And so, and I mean, anybody who lives out in the country has seen these things. Like, it's a gas station, and then the store, the inside the gas station, you can get literally anything: hunting licenses, fishing licenses, live bait, groceries, ammo, sporting goods, wedding dresses. There's a place up in, I can't remember if it's Maine or New Hampshire. It's right on the line that sells wedding dresses as well.
I thought you were being facetious.
No, okay. No, there's a gas station that has a gun shop, a sporting goods shop, a grocery store, and they sell wedding dresses. It started off as a gag, and now they make a big deal of it.
Apparently, they found a market.
Yeah, I'll remember to put that in the show notes. I forget the name of the site. I'm not going to search while we're recording, but yeah, no, there's a place in New England that sells wedding dresses as well as they have an FFL and sell guns and ammo. But essentially, the gag is it's got an actor playing a kid. Talking about buying, in the first one, he's trying to buy a six pack of beer. In the second one, he's trying to buy a lottery ticket. And the store clerk turns him away. And then the kid says, well, what can I get? And the kid ends up settling on buying a firearm. And then a voice that kicks in, which I suspect is David Hogg. He's not given credit, but it sounds an awful lot like him. And they both know each other because these guys are both connected to the Parkland shooting. And they're both funded by Michael Bloomberg. And the person says, isn't it absurd? It's absurd that you can buy guns in the same place that you can buy lottery tickets or you can buy alcohol. But what's even more absurd is that somebody who can't legally buy one of those can buy a gun. And I just was disgusted in the fact that, so at the heart of that last statement, that is technically true. There are several states where the ownership age for a firearm is below 18. Actually, they're talking about it right now with Wisconsin with Kyle Rittenhouse's trial. There is some discussion on it is technically legal for a minor child to possess a firearm in Wisconsin, and just the question is, was Kyle Rittenhouse legally doing so at the time? But there's a bunch of states, in Vermont you can concealed carry at age 16, but you would need to get the gun through a private sale because an FFL cannot sell to anyone a long gun under the age of 18 and a handgun under the age of 21. That is federal law, and they are federally regulated. And these places that he's showing are FFLs. They're not private sales. They cannot sell to minor children. So it's just another instance of why do they just straight up lie? The facts are not on their side, so they make up their own facts.
Well, as you like to say, if they didn't argue in bad faith, they wouldn't argue at all, or something like that.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
The thing that I found most jarring, I mean, other than the idiocy, because I've come to expect the idiocy, is the fact that whoever it was, we think it was David Hogg, sounds like he was phoning it in over a crappy landline connection. Mm-hmm. It's very tinny and a little bit staticky. And I'm just wondering why the heck they couldn't get a decent connection for this. And it does make me wonder if Manuel Oliver maybe called him up and said, hey, David, could you like say these two things over the phone? And he recorded it.
Yeah, definitely sounds like recorded over the phone. And even then doesn't have the completely free voodoo that I use to make everything sound wonderful on this podcast. I mean, I can even make a phone call sound pretty decent, but yeah, it is very, very low production value and very, very low views. They're in the 50s and they've been up for almost a week now. So that is very, very impressive. There's a mutual friend of ours started a YouTube channel where he talks about science fiction starships and how the design works on that. And he has been getting loads more views than that with no advertisement, no sponsorship, no nothing.
That sounds vaguely familiar. Is he the guy whose first video was about the Venator class Star Destroyer?
Correct. Yeah, it's called Sacred Cow Shipyards. All right. So last of our little main topic discussions is Tis the Season. And I saw this like a couple hours before we started recording. And I heard this on the local news and I just went, oh my God, this is a story for ACP. And unfortunately, I don't have a ton of information for it. I actually looked around a little bit. The link in the show notes, I kept the first one that I had seemed good enough. And all the other ones are equally as vague because it doesn't actually say who these people are or where this is located. But essentially, it is a mall Santa. And of course, it is a mall Santa in the COVID world. So it's kind of like the people on the news were joking about the fact that it kind of looked like they were... it was kind of a prison visitation because essentially Santa's got a desk and there's a little bench in front of the desk that the kids can climb up on. And so they can be at whatever level that they need to be to talk to Santa. And Santa is behind a sheet of plexiglass and talking to the kids. And in this video, let me tell you, this Santa, he's clearly either not a great mall Santa or was just burnt out and already done this early in December, because he's pretty much the, hey, what do you want type mall Santa. And this kid's just kind of flustered and finally asks for a Nerf gun. And Santa says, no, no guns. And the mom chimes in and says, no, no, no. He said a Nerf gun. He goes, nope, not even a Nerf gun. No guns. If you want your dad to get it, have him get it for you, but I'm not going to get you a gun. And the kid just breaks down in tears that Santa is essentially shutting him down. And I had to bring this in as just another admonishment of anti-gun culture, of just the, I mean, what are you doing? I mean, this is nothing new. This immediately brought to mind, I had friends that I would play with that they had G.I. Joes and they had lots of G.I. Joes and all that. Mm-hmm. But none of the G.I. Joes had guns because that was for the parents would give them the G.I. Joes. They would unwrap the G.I. They would open up the packages and then they would take all the little plastic M16s and machine guns and pistols and all that and throw those in the trash, because you can play with the G.I. Joes, but you can't play with guns because guns are bad.
Oh, God. I tried to wrap my brain around that logic and I sprained something.
Yeah. Never mind that my daughter shoots stuff with sticks all the time. We'll be out walking and she'll see a stick and she'll be like, oh, no, there's a bad guy. Pew! It's just one of those like...
That said, though, okay, those are the parents. The parents have the right to screw up their kids however they want. Mm-hmm. But you've got a guy who is being paid to play the role of Santa. Santa does not inject politics into anything. Mm-hmm. You know, Santa is smiling and happy and is happy to see the kids and listens to what the kid says. And the contract goes, well, if you are a good boy or girl, I'll bring it to you. Mm-hmm. You know, it is conditional upon being good. And that's it. Shut up and do your job.
Or even I have heard Santa's do the I will see what I can do on these.
Okay.
Santa may not get you everything, but Santa's there's all green lights with Santa. And I mean I immediately remember I must have been about this kid's age. I was fairly young because I remember asking for just about every Transformer I could think of, and I knew that I was so young that I didn't even know all their names. I remember specifically asking Santa for the Jeep one, which was Hound, by the way, because I'm still a Transformers geek. But I didn't even remember that name at the time, and I will have you know I never had a Hound action figure. And guess what? I didn't care. I got presents at Christmas time, and I never once went, hey, you know what? Santa shorted me on some of these. Again, we just see sometimes the joyless nature of being anti-gun. I mean, we talk about there being no anti-gun shows. You know, there's nothing that you could do for fun as anti-gunners. You can't go to the range. You can't go to an anti-gun museum and look at stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You can't listen to I mean, there's no anti-gun podcasts because they just burn out.
Yeah, I think it's just something like you can't go to the anti-gun range and not shoot a gun, mm-hmm. you know?
And the fact that, I mean, furthermore, that this guy is just not even like seeing what the heck he's doing right here to this kid, that he's just so self-righteous that he's just like, oh, no, don't cry. We could get you lots of other stuff, just not the thing that you want, the one thing that you asked for. Because it's not like he was laying out a laundry list. He specifically wanted a Nerf gun. That's what he wanted. And like looked at his mom. He goes, does that mean I'm not going to get it? And she says, no, you're going to get it. It's okay. And damn right he's going to get it. He might get a couple upgrade levels. I think mom might be like, I'll show Santa. And oh God. And on top of that, that might be a good time for my daughter to learn the proper usage of certain words. Fellow podcaster Adam Carolla had a great line that I always loved. And he always says, always have an F off chambered and ready. Meaning that at any point, if you suddenly find yourself so shocked by somebody being so horrible that you're just speechless, you got that F off right there. Tell them to F off. Because if you got to that point where you just like, I don't even know how to respond to you. Yeah, you're that awful that you could probably use a little pushback in your life. But unfortunately, mommy can't be telling Santa to go to hell. Though I do hope mommy did go and talk to the nice people, because I did not know as a child that there was a monetary transaction that went through with Santa things. But now that I have a child of my own and all that, they are cheap. It's not it's a little steep as far as I'm concerned to go see Santa, but you know, mm-hmm. whatever. And so I would definitely be going up to Santa's little helper over there and say, yeah, you can give me my money back for that.
Yeah. Once again, and there's really not a whole lot of context here, I just flash back to that one particular scene in Hogfather where Death is playing the Santa analog, and you know, the little girl comes up and, you know, Death is trying to be human, and she asks for a castle, and he says, and this is contingent upon you being good. Yes, the deal is concluded, you know, and it struck me as being funny because it does represent the transactional nature of it. And the guy didn't even achieve that level of warmth.
No. No, as a matter of fact, this show was playing the clip from A Christmas Story where he's asking the Santa I was actually just rewatching it. It showed up in the related link at YouTube, and rewatched that. And it was one of those like, oh man, that Santa was probably hammered drunk by the looks of him. He's definitely made up with a good old gin blossom nose. And even that Santa was much warmer than this dude. Well, shall we shift gears again, Aaron?
Yes, we shall. So anyone who knows me knows that I'm a big fan of pistol caliber carbines. David is here to give us a history on the carbine itself.
Hi, and welcome to Gun Lovers and Other Strangers. How about some interesting firearms history? As usual, this will be a general overview, as I don't have time to go into great detail. In 1938, the U.S. Ordnance Department was looking for a light rifle or carbine design to issue in place of a pistol to rear echelon personnel, such as truck drivers, cooks, etc. In 1941, seven companies and designers competed to produce what the military was looking for. These prototypes were chambered in a new cartridge, the 30 caliber carbine, a smaller and lighter round than the standard issue 30-06 rifle round, yet with the same bullet diameter. Essentially a rimless version of the obsolete 32 Winchester self-loading cartridge, the 30 carbine fires a round-nose 110 grain bullet from a slightly tapered straight-walled case at a muzzle velocity of approximately 1,970 feet per second. In the late 1930s, Winchester Repeating Arms Company had hired David Marshall Marsh Williams, a former moonshiner and convicted murderer. Times were different back then. He'd begun work on his short-stroke gas piston design while serving his prison sentence for that crime. In the 1952 movie Carbine Williams, his part was played by Jimmy Stewart. Being interested in the design of their full-size rifle, the Army asked Winchester if they could scale it down for the light rifle program. 13 days later, Winchester responded with a prototype. Based around Williams's short-stroke gas piston, Winchester engineers, under the supervision of Edwin Pugsley, scaled down their .30-06 M2 rifle to fit the much smaller .30 carbine cartridge. This handmade prototype was cobbled together using any parts they had at hand. These included the fire control parts from a Winchester Model 1905 rifle, the hooked breech and barrel band from a percussion shotgun, and a modified Garand operating rod and bolt. The Army observers were very taken with this new design at the initial testing in August of 1941. After producing a more polished version, the second prototype beat all the other carbine program contenders at the next trial in September of 1941. Winchester was notified of their success the following month, when standardization as the United States Carbine Caliber 30 M1 was approved. The next step was to find manufacturers who could produce the carbine quickly and to specification. Over the next 3 years, June 1942 through August 1945, 9 contractors set up manufacturing facilities and turned out over 6 million carbines of all types. Carbines were made by the following companies: Winchester, of course, the Inland Division of General Motors, Underwood, a typewriter manufacturer, Saginaw Steering Gear, also of General Motors, National Postal Meter, Quality Hardware, IBM, Standard Products, another maker of automotive parts, and Rockola, who prior to this had made jukeboxes and slot machines. Irwin Peterson was also contracted to make carbines, but their initial production were all rejected by the government, and their contract was given to Saginaw Steering Gear. Near the end of the war, in fact the same month their contract ended, National Postal Meter changed their name to Commercial Controls Corporation. Under this name, they made just over 200 carbines with the new markings, making them the rarest and most sought-after variant. According to some researchers, there are more carbines with falsified commercial controls markings than were actually produced. Out of the total production, Inland produced over 2.5 million, or 43%, of all carbines made during World War II. The next largest producer was Winchester themselves with just over 800,000, or around 13.5%. The remaining 7 contractors produced around 500,000 or less each. Some, such as Rockola, at just over 200,000, made much less. The carbine program was so successful that except for Inland and Winchester, the government canceled all remaining contracts in mid-1944. The 2 remaining companies completed their production in August of 1945. On an interesting note, none of these contractors made all the parts for their carbines. For example, Underwood made 35 of the M1 carbine's 58 parts, while Quality Hardware only made receivers. Numerous subcontractors made other parts for the carbine, such as Milton Bradley, who made stocks, and Buffalo Arms, who made barrels. All carbines were made from a mix of parts from various makers. This situation was jumbled even further throughout their service lives. For one example, Union Switch and Signal made receivers for National Postal Meter and stamped U behind the rear sight dovetail. When they had to remark receivers for Quality Hardware, to avoid the extra effort of strike-through and restamp, Union Switch and Signal merely stamped them unquality. This type of amusing puzzle adds to collector interest in the carbine. The M1 carbine served in every theater of World War II and with all branches of the U.S. military. It was loved for its lightweight, 15-round magazine, and fast follow-up shots. However, many soldiers, sailors, and Marines claimed not to be admiring of its lighter bullet and shorter range. Probably the weakest point in the M1 carbine design was the magazine. Originally intended to be effectively disposable, they were made as cheaply as possible in huge numbers. Even upgrading them with new springs and followers today may not help. Original production magazine bodies are over 70 years old, and it shows. New manufacturer magazines are available, and if made to proper specification, can clear up a number of function problems. Towards the end of the war, M1 carbines went through arsenal refurbishment. This included the usual cleaning and replacement of any worn parts, but also replacing the push-button style safety with a lever type, replacing the 2-position flip rear sights with a milled or stamped elevation adjustable version, and replacing the plain barrel band with one that incorporated a bayonet lug. Finding carbines without these upgrades can be challenging. However, original parts or quality reproductions are available for those who want to restore their carbines to wartime as issued condition. Just make sure to keep the original parts. Following the war, the carbine went on to be issued to our allies. This included German police forces and border guards. Numerous other countries, from Israel to South Korea, were given or lent M1 carbines as well. The U.S. military issued M1 carbines all the way through Vietnam when they were finally replaced by the M16. For a pistol replacement that went from design to issue in just over a year, that's not a bad track record. Both vintage and new manufactured carbines are still available. Even prior to the 2020 rush, prices for original carbines were increasing. From around $20 each for NRA members in the 1950s, to a few hundred dollars each from the CMP earlier this century, it's now difficult to find one in decent condition for much under $1,000. If you have one that needs some TLC, parts are available through Numrich Gun Parts Corporation and Brownells. I'm fortunate enough to have two M1 carbines in my collection. A November 1944 production Inland I bought through the CMP, and a U, for Union Switch and Signal marked, National Postal Meter made in March or April of 1944 I acquired through a private sale. Due to my and my father's background in New York and the computer industry, I'd really like to add an IBM to my collection, but they're hard to find, and understandably, Oddmall won't give me his.
So, Weird, you are going to do the thing, right?
That about wraps up this segment. If you have any questions for me or suggestions for future segments or a comment on a past segment, please post them on the Assorted Calibers Podcast Facebook page, and Aaron or Weird will make sure I get them. To find our Facebook page, just type ass in the search bar. You'll find us. That's all for now. Thanks for listening. I'm David, and this is Gun Lovers and Other Strangers.
Is it carbine or carbine, Aaron?
So, there is discussion on this in the same way that people disagree on how Jaf is pronounced. Some people Jifs, other people Gif, or how memes are pronounced, memes or mems. But there was a very interesting video put together by, I think it was Tal Fledermaus, that David linked. And it was the nicest sit down and shut up video that I've ever seen. I don't know that I should really give the answer. It's very entertaining for people to watch. I will, however, just say that once Gun Jesus weighs in, the argument is definitively settled.
Isn't that the truth?
Like, oh, that's how Ian says it. That's it.
Also, two other factoids on there that I was just amazed at the thought of that is that Carbine Williams was a convict and serving his sentence while he was designing the M1 carbine. I mean, just, oh, the fact that, like, there's a convict designing a U.S. service weapon, like, that is something that will never happen ever again. And honestly speaking, when you think of what an interesting design it is, and furthermore, essentially, that design is what Bill Ruger ended up taking for the Mini 14. The Mini 14 is definitely much more of an M1 carbine than an M14 shrunk down. And the last factoid that I saw was that Milton Bradley made stocks for the carbine. And the thing that immediately popped into my head, I don't know if you since your dad's a Vietnam vet, did he ever talk about the fact that when the M16 was first introduced, it was a common rumor. This is not true, but it was a common rumor that Mattel actually made the furniture for the gun.
Mm-hmm. I don't know about the foreguard, but it was definitely it's an article of faith for my father. I'm surprised to hear that it's not true. But yeah, he told me that the stock was made by Mattel and it was cheap plastic and it would shatter if you tried to knock a Viet Cong skull with it.
Well, there. I mean, honestly speaking, I wouldn't be surprised with, I mean, that was early enough in the plastic world. I mean, this is very much like contemporary with the scene from The Graduate. I just got one word for you. Plastics. And so it wouldn't surprise me if the plastic was not rigid enough to beat somebody with or any sort of like serious percussive work. But I am pretty sure I might be wrong, but I believe I've heard enough people state that Mattel making the stocks for the M16 was indeed apocryphal.
Huh. Okay.
But again, so widely believed that even your father still thinks that it's an absolutely true statement.
Yeah.
Now it's time for the ACP House Dick. This time, Steve's here to talk about integrity as a PI or any business owner.
Good evening, everybody. It's your favorite neighborhood drunk monkey. Tonight's episode is a little bit of a rant. Anyone in the business of business, really, has one of those clients or customers. Every so often, you know, they might be, in my instance, new adjusters, staff attorneys, or domestic clients in particular. Now, with this one in particular, we've gone back and forth on things like rate and schedule for the better part of 2 weeks, and we start getting things set up. This particular customer was a new hire and with a larger client that I've done work for 4 years. We exchange small talk, get to know each other, and we begin the pre-surveillance workup, and we solidify a game plan. Now, fast forward to this afternoon. It's December 2nd, 2020. We've done a handful of days on the case. Billing is stable. We have billing coming to an end. Looks like about the end of this week, depending on the level of activity we see. And as of yet, we hadn't seen hide nor hair of the target since we started the endeavor several days ago. We got a bunch of digital leads of various kinds, social media and the like. But what we don't have is video evidence of the subject. Now, I've confirmed addresses, registered vehicles, family members who've been visually ID'd using social media, and IDing them from client-provided documents and everything else. And this afternoon, I finally get some activity and record it. Now, it's mundane and brief, to be perfectly frank. But a day of activity, however, is a day of activity, especially after long bouts of nothing. You know, when you see anything, you tend to take notice. And I wrap up for the day and phone in to the new guy to get him up to speed, as is my protocol. I give half day and end of day updates. So those guys that are really tight with their budget have a little bit of control from their home offices, wherever they happen to be in the country. Now, I get him up to speed. He's not happy. But Trunk Monkey, we only wanted the money shot, only the heavily incriminating information recorded. And he's panicking because, as far as I can guess, the state he's based out of is not a single-party consent state, of which Michigan happens to be. And this, of course, is ignoring the whole you're out in public and have zero expectation of privacy anywhere and all that good stuff. I have to calmly explain to this particular gentleman my ethical code and professionalism that I've relied on in the business now for some 18 years. And that is that I record everything that my target does if I've been tasked to watch them. You know, if he goes and checks the mail, I record that. If he changes the tire on his
sugar
box, I record that. If he goes to the grocery store, I record that. If he goes into the grocery store, if time permits, I record that. And you know, I don't do highlight reels. I do, but those are specifically for advertising purposes with, you know, identifying marks removed and blurred out. The reason for this is mostly to cover my own keister. And in the pretense of a legal investigation, which all of mine are, should it wind up in mediation or civil or criminal court proceedings, I intend to provide the full picture. You may be paying me, but I need to maintain my objectivity in everything that I do. And sometimes that means, you know, domestic cases that turn out to be scientific, wild-ass guesses, swags, where the party is actually faithful, do happen. And, for instance, in insurance cases where individuals carry on with their lives operating within their medical restrictions, those also happen. Do they happen frequently? No, but they do happen. You know, I'm paid to provide information. I cannot guarantee outcomes. My job, again, is to accurately report on the truth. And if it happens to lose me a client, one particular adjuster or one domestic case out of a larger broader office, because a positive outcome isn't guaranteed. So be it. That being said, you could also disregard everything that I have to say and all the evidence that I provide you. And, for example, not settle early when I tell you evidence advises you to do so. And I'm not sure, for instance, if the $22 million settlement stung a particular in-house attorney's office enough, but that's, of course, a story for another time. Now, so this one's a brief one. As always, guys, keep safe, stay armed, and buy your guns and gear at www.merchantofboom.us and use coupon code ACP for a sweet little discount for purchases. It helps the Trunk Monkey stay on the road, helps keep the lights on. I know money's tight for everybody. So again, just stay safe out there, guys, and I'll see you next time.
I don't know about you, Weird, but I really want to hear that story for another time, because I get the feeling something kind of epic prompted this, and I want to know. I want the juicy deets.
Yeah, I got to say, I mean, I love Steve's segment, and also when we were hanging out at GRPC, just Steve and me just chilling out, and Steve just telling stories, and some stuff is with stories that he's like, yeah, this isn't for publication on the podcast. These are, you know, because he's got his own techniques and trade secrets that he's just like, no, this is what gives me the edge in the field. So I'm not gonna tell anybody about this. Totally understandable, and really mm-hmm. really cool stuff. So yeah. Any PI is fun to talk to, and Steve weaves quite the yarn. So yeah, Steve, we want that story for a later date, please, as much as you could tell us.
Yeah.
Also, I wanted just to say that this does tie into any sort of business, because I mean, first up, I'll say, like, ACP, we don't run ads, but I did when the show was first new, and at this point in time, we've been doing it for so long, we would have to drastically shake up the format. But I did talk to a few companies about ads when the show was new, and it didn't really get a whole lot. Plus, I wasn't really, I'm not that good whoring. just the, come on, baby, you want to just buy a little bit of ad spot? I'll help you out. I just, when I get the no, I'm like, okay, cool. So that's a flaw of mine. But I only approached companies that I personally endorse, that I would be like, oh yeah, what, you know, what should I get for a carry gun? Well, definitely get one of these guns. As far as the guns that, oh, I was thinking about buying one of these, don't buy one of those. And if one of those companies decided to come in and say, hey, Weird, I'm going to give you a bunch of money, will you do an ad read for this crappy gun? I actually would. I just thought about it for a second. Like, well, it depends on how much money, but no, because your reputation makes more money than any single job. You may make money doing that little bit of dishonesty, but now you're dishonest forever. And I thought about this as a line. I think I told it for a blooper reel, but there was a humorous story about, I was on board a fishing boat, and one of the crew members was always sneaking off and doing weird stuff, and I didn't really question it, but it turned out he was he smoked a little bit of marijuana, and so he would sneak off someplace secret. Like oftentimes he would have him turn the radar off and hop on top of the wheelhouse and have a smoke up there. And I think he said he was inspecting the radar. He was going up in there and burning a joint. But I finally got telling him about the fact that, yeah, no, I've shipped out on boats where people are smoking weed and all that. And this is one of those, like, I don't care. I'm here to look at the fish. I'm here to count the fish and look at the weather conditions and all that. And on top of that, if I was to be talking about people doing illegal activities offshore that has no pertinence to my job whatsoever, and people found out about that, that might affect my livelihood considerably. So I just said, yep, doesn't concern me. Do what you want. And there's definitely something to be said about not bowing to a single client in something that might upset future clients.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks to each and every one of our listeners, and a very special thanks to all our supporters on Patreon. To become a Patreon patron, go to patreon.com/assortedcalibers podcast to sign up. Patrons get an early release of the podcast, plus bonus content like our hilarious blooper reels, the ACP film tracks, and the ACP mag dump.
Also, please remember to rate us on Apple Podcasts, subscribe to us on the platform of your choice, and share the show with your friends both online and off.
You can get more from me at my blog, which is weirdworlds.com. That's weerdworlds.com. And hear me weekly on Handgun Radio on the Firearms Radio Network.
I got nothing new to add here. You know where to find me. And a special hello to all the listeners who actually make it this far. I think most of you turn off at about the time Weird says thanks to each and every one of our listeners.
Yeah, but come on. We gotta say thanks to Nate Spencer for our music, and then Aaron's going to come up with something witty.
Well, my tushy is nice and sparkling clean, and Weird's isn't. Our hiney hygiene is assorted, and so's our podcast. Good night, everybody.
Good night. I'll have you know, young lady, that I am freshly showered.